And here I am, you know, I'm 31, 32, going, you know, trying to build a career of some sort. And I said, well, you know, if you ever think about selling the studio again, like, let me know, I might be interested. And she called me like 2 weeks later and she was like, you know, I'm interested in selling it to you. And I'm like, cool. I'm thinking like 5 years down the road. She's like, no, let's do this and see if we can work it out in 6 months.
Pod BN.
Three, two, one, here we go. Episode 2 of Pod BN. Welcome, my name is Justin.
And I'm Tyson.
Today we spoke with Carmen Champion, local business owner. We spoke about her past life as a bartender and some of the craft beer scene and wine scene around town.
Then around the 25-minute mark, we talk about her businesses that she owns, Main Street Yoga and Boutique Von Champs. Or was it Von Champs?
Von Champs. We'll have to listen and find
out.
Yeah. About an hour in, I've got her to talk about downtown Bloomington, where her businesses are located. We talked about some of the good and bad and what the perceptions are of downtown. So hope you tune into the whole thing and check us out.
Yeah. A couple of technical points real quick. We are here at Play Normal Esports in their studio, and we were happy to see when we came in that there were a whole bunch of kids playing Fortnite, having a good time. But the room has some good soundproofing in it, but it's not perfect. So you will hear a little bit of background noise in the beginning part of about the first half of the episode. And also, we got some feedback on our first one. Appreciated how many people listened, by the way. Very flattering. There were a couple people who asked us if we were going to be trying to improve our mic quality. We are working on that, and hopefully we're a little better this time, and we're going to keep trying out some new hardware here until we get a good fit.
If you'd like to sponsor us, that could really help up our mic game faster.
That was subtle. Subtle,
yeah,
Justin.
Well, I got to throw it in. We are at episode 2 of Pod BN. At the Play Normal Esports Studio. My name is Justin.
And I'm Tyson.
And we're joined by Carmen Champion as our guest today. Hi, Carmen.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Happy Sunday.
It is a Sunday when we're recording. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy Sunday for me.
Big weekend?
No. I mean, nothing out of the normal, but Sundays are my day off.
There you go. So your day off, so let's talk about you. What do you do? Why are you relevant to Bloomington Normal people?
Well, I'm still trying to figure that out myself, to be honest. I own two businesses in downtown. So I own Main Street Yoga and Von Champs Boutique, which are both on the 400 block of Main Street.
Awesome.
So I've had Main Street Yoga for going on 4 years, and then I just opened the shop last July.
So take me back before that. So are you a Bloomington Normal native?
I am from just outside of Waynesville, Illinois. You guys know where that is?
I do not know where Waynesville
is.
Well,
you know what? If a zombie apocalypse hits, go to Waynesville because nobody's going to stumble across it. So it's a town of about 350 people, kind of between McLean and Clinton.
Okay.
So there's no main road that runs through it. There's no train that runs through it. You know, they have the whole community, once you drive in, they have go-kart signs because they drive go-karts around the town.
So what school district is that?
Olympia.
Okay. So is that where you graduated high school?
Yeah. That's where I went. Yep. And college at ISU, circa by way of Heartland.
Yeah.
So I did the 2-year associates at Heartland and then finished up with a psych degree at ISU. Most of my career I spent in the bar business, though.
Yeah?
Here in Champaign. I started bartending in Champaign when I was 20, and you only need to be 19 to bartend in Champaign, and ran bars down there and then came up here and just kept going, and I just kind of got tired of it.
Did you like it initially? Or did it just like become a job?
You know what? I really loved the bar business. And I still like the business because I really like food. And I liked the energy I liked working on my feet. So I liked moving around a lot. And I liked interacting with the people. I just got tired of dealing with drunks and the actual, like, restaurant bars were okay, but bars, like, people are not a shining example of themselves after like 11, 11:30. So I just kind of got tired of that component of it.
As a mid-30-year-old that's been out after 11 just a few times over the last couple months, I understand.
Oh, my God. I was up till 11:30 last night. I was dying. I'm texting my husband going, please, can we go home? I'm so tired.
But I am always fascinated with bartenders. I mean, one, because I've noticed that different bars kind of set different rules for bartenders. Like, I've seen where bartenders can drink on the job.
Yeah.
I've seen where bartenders can't drink on the job.
Yeah.
I've seen where bartenders are kind of grumpy and serve you your drinks. And it's like, you know, you go to a college bar and they're all having fun and doing shots with the patrons.
Yeah.
What's been your experience? Has it always been the same style, or have you jumped around?
No, it's always directed and navigated by the owner. So the owner always sets the tone for what kind of bar it's going to be. I've worked in bars. You know, have I drank while I worked? Yeah, but that was never really my jam. I didn't enjoy it. No, I needed to be on.
Yeah.
So drinking at work was never really a jam of mine. And I knew a lot of people that, well, not a lot, but there were a couple people that used to get carried away, and they got carried away, and it was frustrating. You didn't want to work with those people.
Of course.
So, but yeah, it was always, you know, the tone's always set by the owner or manager, and there are some people that I would absolutely work for again, even though I don't have any intention of getting back into that business. And then there are some people that, you know, I'd probably cross the street if I saw them walking down. So,
were you in bars that, like, mainly serve draft beer and stank, or were you, like, shaking the stuff above your head? Like,
started
you see
in
on
a
bar
martini
rescue.
Bar.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah, so, you know, that was an interesting, it was a 6,000 square foot bar. It's not... it's open, but it's not open in that capacity anymore. It's now called Guido's in Champaign. Before it was Two Main.
Okay.
And I started there cocktailing. Very quickly became the office manager. That's where I met my best friend. And then I started bartending. And they didn't even let me touch alcohol the first week I bartended.
Yeah.
I had empty bottles and pourers and glasses, and I poured water for the first week.
Yeah.
Because in that environment, and I was really, really grateful I started there because it carried me through the rest of my bartending career. But, you know, you had to perfect your pours.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to, by feel, know, and by time, count, do counts. And so we never used jiggers. You would just pour out of the bottle, and you'd take the water bottle, and you'd pour water into empty glasses, and, you know, Jobby and Dave were my two trainers, and they'd say, pour half ounce. And so I would practice half ounce, and then they'd build me up to an ounce, and they'd build me up to an ounce and a half. And so after a week of, you know, 4 to 6 hour shifts, you can blind pour, and you don't have to...
And I don't people don't realize how big of a deal that is to an owner or management of a bar is getting the pours right, because how much waste can go into an over-pour. You know, if you have a bartender that's not trained well,
tons.
They can waste a lot of revenue going out the door that way.
Yeah, right? And the worst misconception that I think, like, amateur bartenders have is they think that by over-pouring or, like let's say you do a Jack and Coke, you know, they do too much Jack in there, and they think they're giving, like, the patron a compliment, and really you're just messing up the drink.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It just tastes bad.
Like, I don't ever want to be paid a compliment like
right.
that.
No, I actually agree. And then I imagine a place that you described probably are dealing with a little bit higher in liquor than, you know,
yeah.
the well stuff,
yeah.
right? So
yeah.
So the measurements are even more important in that way.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Like, we served Cristal at the bar that I worked at when Cristal was, like, the big thing.
Yeah, when it was
and
in all the rap songs.
It was in all the rap songs. And we got Cristal and everybody. And then we opened a bottle after a big event that we did. Just to celebrate, and I tasted it. I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah.
not for me.
You know, I actually, back when I started off, you know, drinking nothing but beer right when I turned 21, and then I started exploring some of the spirits and stuff. But it took me till probably around 30 years old to realize that there's such a major difference in the top shelf versus the lower stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when I remember the day I told everybody I hated tequila for the longest time. I said, this stuff tastes like gasoline. I don't know why anybody would want it. But then someone gave me a shot of Patron once, and I was like, this is delicious, and I should have a bottle. But, I mean, that's what really kind of opened my eyes to maybe I should try the higher and vodkas and, the, you know, that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Patron's kind of got the big name for being the fancy tequila, but you can even do, there's so much better tequila out there.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean,
tequila is really fascinating because tequila is a lot like bourbon and whiskey in the way it's aged and stuff like that. And so if you get savvy on like your whiskeys and your bourbons, you'll know a lot about tequila.
This community has a big bourbon following.
It does. Well, yeah, it does.
Or at least it's starting to. I've heard a lot more about
it. I think it's being talked about more. And I think what the craft beer thing has done for this community is it's elevated our palates.
Yeah.
Which this community really, really needed. Like, like the Bud Light community is just really, really over.
Yeah, where did that come from? Because I got...
What's that?
All the craft breweries. Because, I got young kids.
Yeah.
So I haven't really been paying too much attention to what's going on. My youngest one's 4 now, so I'm finally able to kind of peek my head up
the
and look at what's going around.
The 4-year-old doesn't bring you into the craft beer world.
He does not. So I feel like there was...
By 6, he will. If he hasn't started you drinking yet, he will.
I feel like there was Distill like 8 years ago, yeah. And all of a sudden it's just exploded.
Yeah, what do we got? We have Distill, White Oak, Keg Grove, Little Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing anybody?
I think that covers it. Yeah.
So do you know? And I'm not assuming that the bartenders necessarily know everyone. That's
not everyone
going on
does
with that,
no.
But
where this started?
You know, have they kind of? Has there always been like a subculture, and it's just sort of gotten popular?
There's always been a subculture. Okay. It was really nurtured in Brugola before Brugola is what it is
That's
now.
That's very true, yeah.
So you used to always get like your small batch brewers at Brugola. And I think now Brugola has just grown into such a massive event that the little guy gets overwhelmed by that. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people that brew at home. I have friends that do it. I don't know a lot about it myself, but the craft beer like movement... I think Flat Tire was a big component of that.
Yeah.
Because Flat Tire created a culture for their employees. They gave everybody a bike. They're pretty eco-friendly. And then the people that really moved the craft beer around and helped the little guy was actually Miller Lite. So Miller Lite saw it before anybody else.
Yeah.
And they started going, you know, they had, they carried Sam's. And I don't know, because beer brands move around between distributors, so this might not be the case anymore. I've been out of the loop for a little while. but I'm trying to think, in like 07, I want to say right around there, you know, Miller Lite was doing a big push on finding these little brewers. And, you know, it really started with Sam Adams. You know, they started pushing Sam, and they started seeing that the people were really drawing towards Sam. And they're like, well, who else can we get? Because Sam could almost produce the volume. I mean, there was a period of time where, you know, you just run out of Sam Adams. You know, you couldn't get Oktoberfest into December. Yeah. You could barely get it through middle of October before everybody ran out. Because
now they
Sam,
put it out in August.
Yeah, now they put it out in August, and you can get it all the way up until December. And it doesn't seem like there's, you know, Oktoberfest for Sam Adams. You ran out. And so people would go, and as soon as it came out, you know, they'd hoard it. And they'd go and they just buy up as much as they can because they knew that they only put out a limited supply.
Right.
And it's still a seasonal item, but now Oktoberfest is a lot more competition because of everything else. But that partially is Miller Lite kind of bringing to light this, hey, there's smaller breweries and we're going to try to nurture them and help get them out there and let people, you know, use us as this facilitator of the little guy. And I'm not sure if Bud Light's doing that yet. You know, like I said, I haven't been in this world and a few years, but yeah, it was really Miller Lite.
As a guy that likes beer, I will say I like my craft beers. I like going to a place that has a great selection of beer and trying the different stuff out. But I do get kind of irritated at the craft beer snobs. You know, because don't yell at me for ordering that Miller Lite, especially like, it all depends on what I'm doing, right? Like if it's summertime and I'm grilling, I can drink 3 Miller Lights over that hour and feel pretty feel pretty good. It's light, it's refreshing. But if I'm sitting down for a dinner, then I might order a craft beer, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, but I the snobs make me mad.
Well, and you know what? Like, it's unfortunate what people have done with alcohol. Because, like, you know, okay, so have you guys ever watched Bottle Shock?
No.
It has, oh gosh, he's so great. He played Snape in...
Alan Rickman.
So he's in this movie. It's fabulous.
Now he's always Snape. Before it was Die Hard.
Sorry. Hans Gruber. Yeah,
he'll
sure.
always be Hans Gruber.
But in Bottle Shock, they kind of talked about when the California wineries started to become a major player, because the French and the Italians were kind of like, Americans don't know how to do wine. And it was about in the late 90s that, you know, people, oh, I don't really drink wine. There's nothing really affordable. I don't know wine to drink. Like, how many times do you go into a store now and you just grab whatever's in your price point?
Yeah, well, I think that's how most people shop.
You know, it is. And so what happened is that, you know, White Zinfandel came around, Sutter Home White Zinfandel. I know this is going to sound really weird, but hear me out. So Sutter Home White Zinfandel, it was accessible, it was inexpensive, and people liked it. And so people are like, I don't really care. I like White Zinfandel. I'm going to drink it. And they'll drink it quietly, or they'll order it, and they'll kind of have this like sheepish, like, don't yell at me for ordering White Zinfandel. But it was really kind of this, the beginning of, you know, this movement of people saying, you know, I don't really care. I like it.
Yeah.
And so what started with people didn't know what to pick, then wineries started figuring out, you know, what people pick based off the label.
Yeah.
And they really don't know what they like. And so now when you go in, you kind of find a clever label, you do, but it started to build up this momentum of the wine of there can be different price points. And there was a lot of underground talk in the wine world about, you know, people really want to drink wine, but they're afraid to because they're worried that they're going to get scolded. They're not drinking the right stuff. They don't know what the right stuff is. And then what they started doing was they were like, well, we're going to nurture these people that don't know what they're going to pick, and we're going to change our labels. We're going to make fun, tongue-in-cheek labels. And it really started pulling the wine off the shelf, so, making it more widely available to somebody that doesn't really know a lot about wine.
I'm not a huge wine guy, but the business fascinates me. Do you know, have you heard of the name Gary Vaynerchuk?
I know Gary Vaynerchuk very well.
Okay, so
I took his Skillshare class in 2008.
So Gary V, as he's commonly known, and you can Google him and find a million things on him.
Not at work, though, because he drops a lot of F-bombs.
He does have a foul mouth. But that's how he got his start, right? So his dad owned, owned a liquor store, put Gary in charge of marketing, and Gary said, well, let's throw this online. And he started a YouTube channel, Wine Library, which is now a huge mail delivery wine service. But... part of the appeal to the YouTube channel that when he first created it, and I'm telling his story, so I might get it a little wrong, is just that. He said, you know what, drink what you like. If it's a $15 bottle, drink that. And he would often give, hey, here's a $150, $200 bottle of wine, and here's a $20 one that tastes pretty darn close to it.
Yeah.
And he'd
do it in a Jets jersey.
Yes, right. And he did it as an ordinary.
Yeah.
He was from New York, so an ordinary, or New Jersey, he's an ordinary guy. And I think you're right. I think that gave people permission.
Yeah.
Right? It gave the everyday person permission to be like, yeah, I can like wine.
Yeah. The other thing that his dad actually, I don't remember if his dad put him in charge of the wine department or if he just decided that he wanted to know about wine.
Yeah.
That kind of facilitated a lot of that.
And he's an obsessive type person. And if you watch his YouTube videos, you'll learn about everything. So yeah. I can totally see that where he's just like, you know what, I'm going to learn everything about wine now.
Yeah.
And go do that. But yeah, that is fast. And so here's another question, backing up a little bit. Because beer is getting more popular, are we going to start seeing more expensive beer? Like, I mean, because you can buy hundreds of dollar bottle of wine.
Sure.
I haven't seen that in beer yet. Is that ever going to get there? Is that...
See, the thing that you're going to run into is that the beer will spoil and change in flavor over time, not in the way that wine will.
Okay.
Like, wine will mature, beer will spoil.
That's fair.
And so I don't know that you'll see it. And I don't think that there are brewers out there that are really that interested in that.
I also think it's a class.
Like, they really want their product to move.
I also think it's a class thing, right? Like we talked about, wine started off as high class and now has come to normal.
Yeah.
Where beer did start off as a lower class, at least in this country,
yeah.
Lower class, and now it's getting to be the higher
little
end.
High
so,
brow.
So it's
yeah.
coming from the other side.
And it fluctuates like that all the time. Right? Who knew that your yoga teacher was going to come in here and talk about booze?
That's why I love podcasts. That's why I love podcasts.
What I was thinking is, like, the thing I like about craft beer is that it's kind of the same thing I like about podcasts, is you can just find these little niche, however you pronounce that word. Mm-hmm. You can find these little niche things that just appeal to some small segment of the population. But if you like it, then you like it. Like, yeah. I really like sour beers. I would never try to talk anyone into liking sour beers. It's a very strange flavor.
Yeah.
And I know that it's not something that you could mass market. You know, you're not going to see a Bud Sour, I don't think. It's just not that widely appealing. But, you know, Distill does a good job, and I like their wild sours.
And the people that like the sours are, like, obsessive over them.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Like,
yeah.
It is. It's a small, but they dialed into that, right? Like, they didn't, who knew that there was a population that was going to, I personally don't like sour beers, yeah. Mm-hmm. But who knew that there'd be a population out there that would really, yeah. like, want that?
I also heard the brewers are scared, to go sour because I could be wrong, but I heard this once. That once they do a tank and sour, they can't go back.
Can't do it again.
Oh, I believe yeah. that.
So, like, now that's the sour tank kind yeah. of thing.
Even when I was at Distill, I tried my first one. The server was like, you might not want to have it.
Yeah.
Most
Let's
people
do a
don't
sample,
like it.
Yeah.
made me sample it first. But yeah, it's when you don't have the overhead, when you're, you know, when you're just doing a small batch, right, you can take more of a risk and try to appeal to a small subset of the population. To the podcast point, that's why I like podcasts. The other day I was listening to one where Nate Silver, who does political analysis and statistics on polls and tries to forecast election results, mm-hmm. he teamed up with a Bachelorette podcast to do some, like, predictive analytics on, like, different aspects. Like, if someone gets the first rose, what's their likelihood of being the final person? And I myself am a Bachelor fan, and I also follow the predictive
with
analytics
two worlds
really closely.
Collide.
And I'm like, how many people like me like this subset of things?
Yeah.
Of the correlations?
But I'm just so happy, you know. Me and the five other people who listen to that episode.
So how does Carmen go from bartender and to owning a yoga studio? Where's the gap there?
So before we had a gym on every corner. We might have more gyms than bars in this town, actually.
Well, those are everybody's two favorite hobbies.
Right.
And grocery stores.
So
car washes.
There was Goals, there was Four Seasons, and there might have been something else at that time, but you know, and when I was in the bar business, you know, you get up late and you work late. And there wasn't a lot of opportunity to really go to the gym, and nor was I going to get out of bed at 5 a.m. to go to the gym.
I've heard that about bartending, that there's kind of like this, being a waiter or a waitress too, kind of the same thing, that you not fall into, but you eventually, like, are part of this culture where your life is, because even if you get off at 2, right,
yeah,
you're kind of jazzed up from working,
yeah.
and you can't calm down, so then people are hanging out, and you're going to hang out there till like 5 or something, and then you sleep during the day, and
yeah.
that sort of becomes like you're living out of sync with the rest of the world.
You are, and you know, your work days are, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sunday, and Mondays and Tuesdays are your days off, and it's and on Mondays and Tuesdays, you know, you know, those are the people that are out while we're all at home watching The Bachelor.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so I took a yoga class. So it was right around the time, well, we didn't get all of our, like, social stuff off Facebook at the time. You know, Google was just starting to become the browser that we used because it took too long for MSN to load. And we're all like, oh, sweet, it only takes, like, a few seconds for Google to pop up. That's way easier.
They changed the game there. Not to derail your story, but I remember, like, Yahoo, MSN, AOL,
yeah.
their search engines had the news on it, right?
Yeah.
They had everything else on it. And Google said, what if we just did searches?
Yeah.
And it was so clean and fast to load, and that they broke out. I mean, just...
They made an impact that way. And
if they were
going
to put like a 1-inch by 1-inch ad on their homepage, how much do you think they could sell that for?
Oh my gosh.
Oh,
I mean, the fact that thing is still white
is
very impressive. Yeah.
Very true.
They So I was walking down the street, and there used to be a store below Main Street Yoga. And I went in, and I'm pretty sure Kristen Oski, who was a teacher, she was working the store. And I started asking about yoga. I was always interested in it, always wanted to try it when I lived in Champaign. Didn't really have an excuse why I didn't. And I started a one-on-one class. And I went every Saturday morning, fell asleep in relaxation every single week. And, you know, I knew it was something that I really connected with. And it was something I figured out I could do at home when, like, in the middle of the day, like 2 o'clock in the afternoon when I actually had a window to run errands or to do something.
Sure.
And so the yoga thing's always kind of stuck with me. And then, you know, I got out of the bar business and I was a catering supervisor for like 2 years, and that was fine. But, you know, you hit your ceiling, you hit your professional ceiling in the service industry if you don't become a manager or an owner or something like that. Like, there's really nowhere to go. And you don't really want to become a manager because oftentimes you take a pay cut.
Yeah.
To become a manager,
you're
not getting tips, especially in the bar business. And you know, I could pay rent off of, you know, one Saturday night, and that was exactly what I needed. So that was something I always stuck with me. And then I had this opportunity to take a yoga training, and it was just like a 5-day thing. But I didn't have any vacation time left at work. And so my boyfriend, now husband, I said, you know, what would it look like if I quit my job and really tried to pursue this? I also, at the same time, had a little bit of a writing career I was starting. And that was really taken off. I actually had a wine company out of New Jersey send in me wine.
Nice.
And I would make food and pair it with the wine and write about it on a blog. And I was making money at this blog.
Very
and
cool.
I was did cover stories for a magazine and was really starting to build a writing career. And I'm like, you know, between the writing career and, you know, my family owns a farm and I was helping on the farm time to time and this potential for a yoga, I'm like, what would I need to do in order to quit my full-time job that I wasn't going to take me anywhere unless I went into management to kind of pursue a few different interests? And we kind of crunched the numbers, and Levi goes, okay, he's like, well, if you do it, you know, and he's looking, he goes, you have to give your 2 weeks notice by, you know, the day after tomorrow. And I'm like, oh crap.
Yeah.
Like, I only have a couple days to get used to this idea
now
that I'm
going to
quit my job. And so I went in and I quit, and I think everybody kind of looked at me like, okay, good luck. And it was about, and I did the training, and, you know, that was, and I was at Main Street Yoga doing the training, and I would sub, and I started some classes on the side, and just kind of got scrappy, and we ate a lot of beans that year. I remember Levi is so funny because if I go, oh, and let's have some beans for dinner, he's like, oh my god, I may have ruined him on beans because we ate a lot of beans and rice that year. And
so Main Street Yoga already existed at the time.
It's been in business since '96.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was just a teacher there, and then so that was January, February, and then in July, I was having a glass of wine with a previous owner, so it comes back to alcohol.
Always.
And and she had talked about how she was looking to retire, kind of scale back. And here I am, you know, I'm 31, 32, going, you know, trying to build a career of some sort. And I said, well, you know, if you ever think about selling the studio again, like, let me know, I might be interested. And she called me like 2 weeks later, and she was like, you know, I'm interested in selling it to you. And I'm like, cool. I'm thinking like 5 years down the road. She's like, no, let's do this and see if we can work it out in 6 months. I'm like, oh, okay. So I didn't even have any ducks,
yeah,
let alone ducks to line up.
Right.
So all of a sudden I'm like trying to figure out how I'm going to go from eating beans and rice to buying a business. But it was funny because Levi and I were also trying to buy a house at the time. It was easier to buy the studio just through the process than it was to find a house. Like, the process, like, everything that I felt like I was going up against to say no, said yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, bought a house. 2 months later, bought a business, and, you know, just...
And what year was that?
That was late 14, early 15. The papers were signed January 15th of 2015.
Very good.
So that was the beginning of the end.
No.
So, but yeah, and so
So that's interesting. So it was seriously, and we hear about this, like, you know, do something you love, but you were really just a student,
mm-hmm.
and went through the classes where became a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and then ended up buying and owning the business.
Yeah.
So what kind of changes did you make right away? So you have a successful business that's been in business for a long time.
That's the thing, though. Yeah. Like, that was what I said I wasn't going to do. I wasn't going to come in and say, and this is how I feel like the business needs to run. So I didn't change anything for the first year.
Okay.
And that's what I told everybody. I go, I'm not going to change anything. I did, like, kind of update the logo, I think, that year, but yeah. I still wanted it to look like you looked at the old logo and it still looked comparable to the new logo.
Yeah. Got a little bit of makeover.
Yeah, so that people weren't going to have this, like, disassociation, right? So I really didn't change anything. And then, you know, at the end of the year, we painted and we changed some policies and we changed some expiration dates on passes. And, you know, I got a new website. I just updated the website. The other one just had, because it had been around for so long, it just had a lot of junk in it. And so it was easier to just kind of start with a clean slate on that. That wasn't the intention, but that's what worked out. And, you know, you just kind of, now it's just tweaking. You're always just
so tweaking. Yoga always has amazed me a little bit. You know that I've shared this with you before, Carmen, that it always intimidated me for a long time. And then I've actually, you know, I've been through at Main Street Yoga, your 101 class and your 102 class. I've attended a few classes there. I've also attended a few classes at some other studios. And I know that, and I've got, you know, a very weak, but yet I do have a home practice. So I am involved. I by no means would ever call myself a yogi.
Okay.
I mean, I shouldn't say ever, but as of right now, I don't feel like I am. But I love the way it makes me feel and stretch out and that kind of stuff. But what I've noticed by hopping around a little bit is that there are different styles of yoga studios.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, there are some that are, like, you know, playing 96.7 rock music in the background yeah. while you're doing yoga. There are some that are, you know, very much just made to go through the exercise. There are some that are more in the spiritual element of it. Mm-hmm. How would you describe Main Street, and then why is it that way?
Main Street Yoga is predominantly a pranakriya studio, and that's just a style. Just like if I were to talk about martial arts is kind of the umbrella. And then you've got Tai Chi and Taekwondo and Jeet Kune Do and, you know, Kali and, like, all these different styles that all go under the martial arts umbrella. Although somebody who, you know, I explained that to somebody that was a Tai Chi teacher. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. I'm like, okay, because I don't want to, like, be walking around saying this.
Yeah.
People are like, that's not at all what you're talking about. Yoga is the umbrella. And then there's different styles. There's Bikram and there's Vinyasa and there's Iyengar and there's, you know, all these different things that still live under the yoga umbrella, and meditation is a part of that.
Okay.
And so that's why, you know, there's so many different styles, and you walk in, and some people, you know, they have, what do they call it? They have, in Colorado, it's a big deal to smoke weed and then mm-hmm. go and take a yoga class.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that out there. In some classes, you know, they have yoga and wine and yoga and beer, and in some you've got rock music, and in some you have no music, and
right.
You know, it's just yoga. There wasn't a lot of documentation on it over the years. It was very much, you know, you kind of pass on your knowledge like a big game of telephone, and that person is allowed to interpret it however they may. It was the interpretation of what they did with the information that they received that created their practice. And if they worked with the teacher, they would give that teacher or tell that teacher what they interpreted in order to receive another, you know, nugget of information. But it's very subject to interpretation. Now, again, just like you get with the craft beer snobs and the wine snobs and anything else, you know, you've got people that are really, really passionate about, you know, their style or their lineage or what should and shouldn't happen. And you can put it on a sliding scale and be as intense or as relaxed about it as possible.
Go and touch it on that. Like, I think that comparison works really well. like when I first heard of yoga, however many years ago, it was like, you know, some other country's thing.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't, no one around me did yoga. And then it became like maybe a suburban housewife type thing. Like, oh, she's going to yoga. But now I think it's very mainstream. I mean, mm-hmm. you have like, you know, MMA athletes and, you know, all kinds of athletes that are supposed to be these tough guys that are now doing yoga.
Diamond Dallas Page.
Right, right. He's got his whole yoga program. Yeah, yeah, right. So I think that transition's been really cool. I mean, like I said, 10 years ago, I wouldn't even give it a second thought. But going through it, I mean, there's so many benefits to it. And I don't understand, you know, a lot of what you just said with the different lineages
sure.
and spiritual stuff and any of that stuff. But I just know it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And kind of like the wine. Hey, it tastes good and I like it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about yoga. Hey, yeah. it makes me feel good. I kind of like it.
And you'll go through and you'll find teachers that you're like, and because I have done this, where I'll go to a class and I'm like, maybe I liked what you did there, but I don't think I'd ever return to your class again.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really like your style, or maybe the music was too distracting for me yeah. or something like that. And so, and you just, you get to pick and choose just like you would with food and wine.
I went to one class, where they had music that with lyrics that I knew, like it was like 70s, 80s music. And that was, I couldn't do it. I just wanted to sing, you know, like yeah. I'm supposed to be trying to relax and stuff where I just want to sing along to the song. So,
but like a lot of things, it can be defined by its extremes whenever you don't have a lot of information about it. So,
oh, sure.
Like, I think probably the only thing I knew about yoga when I was a kid was from Street Fighter. There was a character named Dalsim who everything he did was like yoga fire, and he was
hilarious.
He was a contortionist basically, right? And so the idea like, oh, go do yoga and you can put your foot behind your head, you know, and it's
right.
like, no thanks, I'm not that flexible.
And I love talking. Carmen has a term that I like called Instagram yoga that you
yeah,
mentioned to me before.
Yep.
That I actually really like that too. Explain what that is.
Instagram yoga is this societal pressure of what yoga is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And so you've got the girl and she's, you know, doing handstands or triangle or whatever posture. And
she's on the mountain with the sunset.
Oh, with the sunset. There's always a mountain and a beautiful background. And, you know, my home yoga practice, I'm just trying to get my dog off the mat. You know?
Right.
Like, Erin Motz is, she's also dubbed Bad Yogi. She's on YouTube and Instagram and stuff. And she does this really funny, like, video of what Instagram yogis really look like, and it's like her like biffing
yeah.
until she finally catches that exact moment where she's in her handstand and the camera takes the picture at just the right time and then she falls right out of it.
Yeah.
But on Instagram it looks like she's like holding this handstand forever.
That's how we all live our lives, right?
Yeah.
Like the Facebook and Instagram is perfect.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. According to Facebook, like I'm like
got it all together, right?
Yeah, I've got it all together, man.
If there's anything I can kill a couple hours with, it's like Pinterest nailed it videos. You know? I love it so much. You know, that's if you just see this beautiful cake that someone made that looks exactly like Pac-Man, and
right.
someone followed the directions precisely, and it looks like a melted candle. You know, it's because this is definitely my life is the latter. I can't make anything pretty. I'm not graceful. So yeah, there's also a closely related to this, I think, is like some, you know, weightlifting or things you see people doing
mm-hmm.
in the gym. And if you want to waste some time on YouTube seeing like gym fails where people are just using weight machines completely incorrectly.
Those are always fun. Yeah,
yeah,
I enjoy those too.
Yeah. So something I wanted to ask you about. You've got yoga, which is this like meditative centering practice. There's, you know, spiritual and physical element to it, getting in touch with your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a business that you're running, which is, you know, the numbers and the employees and the facilities and, you know, the marketing.
Bill paying.
Yeah. You said you still have a home practice.
So
I'm assuming yoga is still something that's important to you. Has this affected your, ability to
has it poisoned the yoga
that?
Well,
yeah.
Oh, has it taken the joy away?
Yeah, has that been tough?
I don't think so, actually. Like, yeah, I mean, it'd be like paying the bills is not my favorite part, and you know, you deal with, you know, typical business, you know, headaches and woes and things like that. But I don't think it's hurt my practice. I think some days it makes it a little more challenging. I probably use my practice a little bit more, to be perfectly honest. And you have to keep in mind, my home practice is not me putting my foot behind my head and doing these beautiful Instagram things in front of the mountains. Like, my home practice was really me just going, Finnegan, get off the mat.
Finnegan's your dog.
Finnegan's the dog. And
that was your husband.
Yeah. and you know, just trying to work on areas of the body that are tight for me. You know, maybe I've been, you know, working on the computer and I'm rounding, and so I'll do heart openers and things to kind of open the shoulders. And I'd say my practice is much more restorative and much more kind of working with what I've been working with that day, than me trying to aim high and land all these big postures. You know, it's really about maintenance.
Maybe helps you manage that the stress of the business aspect.
Yeah. Sometimes you're home practice is just laying in child's pose and crying. So yeah, that definitely happens sometimes. So it's as far as being like, you know, all zenned out all the time. No, like, you know, my friend William, he made a comment one day about the renunciate monks, the ones from 1,000 years ago. And he's like, don't put these guys on a pedestal. He's like, these guys were, you know, they were holy men. They were, you know, kind of taken care of in their communities. And he's like, and they kind of kept themselves isolated. And he goes, here we are, you know, running around. How many people do you interact with a day? Like, you have to traffic, and you have bills, and you've got mortgages and relationships and friends and, you know, social constraints and responsibilities. He's like, these guys didn't have any of that. It was a lot easier for them to work on their practice 10 to 12 hours a day than it is for us. And so if we can just start to, like, get a little bit of a piece of that in our day, great. Like, that's really what our practice is now. And so going back to, you know, being overwhelmed by this idea of what yoga is, you know, I always like the fact that it's heavily interpretative based off the person who's practicing. And it's, you know, there's no yoga police that are going to run around and tell you you're doing it wrong at your house. You know, you can just lay on your mat and cry if you want to, and that can be your practice. Or you could, you know, try to figure out what it would be like to do headstand or handstand, or you know, a lot of people, you know, they're really happy just getting a really good warrior out of the way and balancing in tree.
That's one thing I appreciated about yours, and other studios might do something similar, but when I went through the 101 and 102 classes, not knowing anything except for what I might have seen on TV,
yeah.
You know, I go into Yoga 101, and it was it broke down into great detail each pose, enough where through 5 weeks, is that how long that class is?
Eight
weeks. Well, it only felt like five. It was so amazing.
Maybe you only went to five.
I qualified for 102, so I had to. But it made you so comfortable that after you complete that 101, I've, you know, been able to go to other classes at your studio, other studios, free yoga places, or watch a video at home on YouTube and try to do it at home. And felt comfortable enough to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, because if I would have just say, all right, I've never done yoga before, I'm going to walk into Main Street and do, you know, restorative yoga, I would, one, I don't know what restorative yoga is if I've never done it. But, you know, they're telling me to do poses that I may not know. Not that you shouldn't try it, but you might be a chicken like I am. But going through 101, it gave me the confidence, I guess, to go in anywhere and feel like, yeah, I could probably hang or adjust or make modifications enough where I can complete this class.
I want anybody that comes in, I try to say this a lot in 101, is I don't want you to feel like you're held hostage by practicing here. I mean, as much as I am a business, I'm kind of the worst salesperson, really. Like, go take this and go wherever you want. But more than anything, I want students that go through the 101 program to feel empowered, so that they can not only say, yeah, that looks like I want to try it, but maybe that doesn't look like it works for my body.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, if you're working with physical considerations or knee issues, you know, putting that foot behind that head is probably not going to be a happy space for your knee. So, and giving yourself some power. I had a student come, a woman I'd known for a little while, and she decided she was going to take my 101 program. And in the middle of the program, she went to another space, and they were trying to move her into a the way I understand it is they were trying to move her into as far as she could go. And what she was noticing, because we had just worked on that posture, and she was noticing that she was losing strength by going as far as she could go. She's like, yeah. No, here I feel like I have control. If I keep going, I'm gonna lose my stability. Even though I can go that far, you know, she'd figured out through the class that she shouldn't go that far.
Right.
Like, bending yourself to max capacity isn't really what it's all about. You want that balance between stretch, strength, and mobility. Because, yeah, the stretch thing's great, but if you don't have the strength to help, like, what is the point?
Right.
And as we age, we need to think about that strength component a little bit more, because things atrophy a little bit faster. And
makes sense.
And so we need to support. And so when people come to yoga and they think it's all about stretch, sorry, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It needs to be a balance of stretch, strength, and mobility in order for it to be effective. Because otherwise you get, you know, if you have, you know, and this is probably what I run into the most, is, you know, I'll have people that either they have a heavy, like, runners, like the real big, like, marathon runners, or people that go to the gym, you know, 5-6 days a week, you know, they do come for the stretch. But they're all also balancing it with something else. And so for that individual, like, it makes sense to have a little bit of a variety within their own practice, you know, to come once a week and just open themselves up
and take
a little break.
The when I go through it, what I notice that I get from yoga that I may not get from other forms of exercise is core and back.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two areas that I notice that, like, the stretch feels nice, but I feel stronger also after leaving that class. I feel like I've worked out those muscles that are within my core and back more than I would if I went to a cardio class somewhere or something like that. So the only other thing I wanted to touch on yoga that you actually told me once, and it made me feel good about something, is I always thought I had to, you know, if you go to a yoga class, often they're 30 minutes, 60 minutes, hour and a half long. Most of my yoga is done in like 5 to 10 minute increments at home.
Okay.
You told me that one day. You're like, that's fine. It's okay. You know, I'll get in the shower at night or in the morning or something, I'll just go in an open space and I'll go through some postures and poses. And it just helps. I mean, it's 5 or 10 minutes that I have in that period of time on that day that I can do something for myself into. And I think it's important to tell people that too, because often they're like, I don't have time to go to this hour class.
Every single day at 5 a.m.
Right.
Everybody thinks you have to practice yoga at 5 a.m. I don't practice yoga at 5 a.m.
Got some bad news this week.
Uh-oh, what happened?
I am going to be on a business trip next week, and this goes over a big event here at Normal Esports, where our studio is.
Oh, I heard about this.
Yeah, my kids are big Smash Brothers fans, and the new Smash Brothers game is coming out, and there's a big exhibition going on here. I will not be able to attend, but I'd say if anyone out there themselves or their kids like Smash Brothers, this is going to be the place to be. The details on that is you get to come in, you see the exhibition, you also get another free hour to play anything else you want here. You're going to have a drink and free popcorn.
World famous popcorn. It smells really good.
Well, it's only $10 for all that. It goes from 7 p.m. till midnight, and you're also entered into a drawing for a VIP membership. So if anyone out there is smarter than me and did not schedule a business trip, then you got to be here.
You know what my daughter's excited about?
What's that?
A week from this Friday, on the 14th, they're having a Fortnite tournament. I don't know if your kids are old enough or they're into it, but almost every, you go to any elementary, junior high, or high school right now, the kids are playing Fortnite. And they're having a tournament on the 14th. The first place is going to win some money. Second and third place is going to win some free gear. Registration is from 6 to 6:30 on the 14th. First game starts at 7. I think the entry is going to be like $10 or $20, but it's a night of entertainment at a really cool venue. Play Normal Esports. It's connected to Normal Gadgets, located at 802 South El Dorado. You can find them on the internet at www.playnormalesports.com. So, because I don't want to leave it out, you bought the studio in 2015.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later, you thought, my life's not stressful enough owning this business. So tell us about your second business.
Oh, so I opened a boutique gift shop in downtown Bloomington. It's in the old Bill's Key and Lock on the corner of Main and Monroe, called Von Schantz. And people call it Von Champs, and I really don't care. It is a play off my last name, and we get called the Champs a lot, being the last name Champion. So there used to be a store downstairs of the studio, and I always thought it would be great if that store could come back. And the downstairs has been remodeled, so there's really not a lot of space. It's only probably twice the size of this room, lobby is now.
We're basically in a closet recording this. So.
Yeah. And so I'm like, how great would it be to have props and mats and things for students to have access to? Because, you know, you can go to TJ Maxx and get some of the cheap stuff. And, you know, it might work for, a small home practice, some of those, $5 blocks. But structurally, they are lacking for somebody that's really, really wanting a high-quality item. And so, you know, it's always been kind of a brainchild. And then I really went out to L.A. a few years ago and went up to Ojai, California, and went into a store called Fig. And it's really, really cool store. And I was kind of like, wow, you know, if I ever did something like that, this is a lot like what I want. It really had a little bit of everything. It was dialing into just that. It was kind of an indoor-outdoor store. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know, really, really kind of touching my inner hippiness. Because I'm a country kid. I grew up on a self-sustainable farm.
Yeah.
We did all our veggies and all of our, you know, sold veggies to make dollars for, you know, extracurricular activities, and raised pigs and chickens and goats. And we did not do any of the bigger livestock. And so there's always just that country component, deep inside of me, that struggles living in town. But, you know, Fig really kind of tapped into that, just that earthiness. And then, we went to Paris, a little over a year ago, and I ran and found, we were on the Canal Saint-Martin, and went to Babel, just stopped in, and that was more of a concept store, and, you know, it kind of had that antique-y, with new, and again, it wasn't that it was focusing on any one thing. It was just a really great, all-inclusive store where you're perfect to get a gift. And, you know, kind of started just saying, you know, okay, this is a little bit more like what I want if I were to ever do to that. And, you know, I love downtown. I've been living, working in downtown since, downtown Bloomington since, when did I move? 2005. So I've been downtown for 13 years living and working, and I didn't really see Crossroads as probably the closest thing that was comparable to what my vision was. And we needed more retail down there. And I started talking to Levi about what would it be like to, cause here's the other thing. I can't teach any more classes. I can, but I am scheduled 22 classes a week right now.
Right.
And you know, the only way for me to build my income or to diversify myself or to grow is to either start traveling internationally or nationally to teach, or write a book or whatever. And I feel like people are tired of hearing me talk as it is, which I was stunned when you guys invited me on.
I hope not.
wow, people still want to hear from me. I'm I really need to start to have some career diversification. and, you know, a shop would lend to the studio because I could, you know, be more of a presence. So if somebody came to the studio, they could come to the shop instead and find me. But then also, like, I just saw that, you know, we didn't really have a gift shop, and we didn't really have something that in town that I felt was quite this vision that I had. And I had told Levi, I'm like, you know, if one of three spaces opens up, you know, I might explore this. And I think that sometimes when I say stuff to my husband in passing, he's like, oh, it's just like this fleeting thought, like maybe one of these days I'll like dye my hair green. But actually, like, I'd been stewing on it for quite a bit. And so when Bill's consolidated, people are like, they closed. I'm like, they didn't close. They're still there. Yeah. Clinton and Emerson. that was one of the spaces that I just loved. It's really close to the studio. It's a beautiful space.
It's a great space. I love the windows.
I do too. Like, the windows are great.
Honestly, so I have an office downtown as well. And when it opened up, I was a little jealous. I didn't wait like 8 months before I opened my office because I was like, oh, that's a great space.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I don't love my office, but it's a great space down there. I love the windows.
Yeah, it's cool. And the brick walls in there, it's really special. And so when I went to go, I called because Redbird manages it, and I called them and they said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, somebody's coming in today to sign the lease on this. And I'm like, oh, you know, I just... put the call in, like, if it happens, it happens. And then a week went by and the rent sign went back up. And I called and I went and looked at it, and that was on a Tuesday. And on Saturday, I'm driving to go sign the lease, and I call Levi and I'm like, hey, I'm going to go sign this lease. He's like, you're going to do what? And so we had to have like a quick 20-minute like meeting while I'm in the parking lot getting ready to go in and sign this lease. Like, no, babe, it's a great idea. About 2 weeks later, he's like, after I signed the lease, he's like, you know, I think this is kind of a good idea that you did this. I'm like, oh, thank God you came around.
That's good.
This is going to be a bigger uphill battle than starting a business was trying to get my husband to decide it was a good idea too.
The support is so important to entrepreneurs though, right?
Oh God, yeah.
Like in general, every, you know, most successful entrepreneurs that I know have that behind them somewhere. You know, that strong support that picks up the slack everywhere else because the business owner has to be business focused in so many ways that they need that.
Yeah, and Levi wasn't really in a position, like emotionally supportive, yeah. Moved heavy furniture, absolutely. But as far as, like, picking it up at home, like, he's finishing his degree, so sure. He's been so spread thin. So it's just, you know, I think we just got lucky that, you know, he was like, well, what do you need out of me? And I'm like, every now and again, I need you to move something heavy.
In your truck.
Yeah, in his truck. Yeah. So that's where it kind of got started. And I had already been, for a couple of years, kind of collecting different vendors and different things that I wanted to carry in the store. So I already had a list I was working off of.
So, yeah, what types of stuff? I mean, what if someone comes down to the corner of Monroe and Main, what can they find inside your store?
The thing that I get the most comments on as soon as they walk in is the way the store smells. So when you walk in, there's one level, and then there's a loft space. And the loft space is women's clothing and accessories. But on the main level, it's more gifts. So there's like a kitchen section, a homeware section, some jewelry. We just got lotions and soaps and bath bombs. There's a crystals section with sterling jewelry and crystal jewelry. And there's a little bit of yoga stuff. Not a huge section, but enough that is appropriate. We have a lot of gift cards, greeting cards.
Some men's stuff.
I have some men's stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed pretty quickly that the husbands would walk in with their wives. The wives would drag them in, and they'd kind of get that glazed over look. So there is a chair that has gotten very popular with the gentlemen.
I love stores with a chair.
I actually have two chairs and a little sofa. So, but I started bringing in more men's stuff because of the feedback I was getting was, you know, you really should have just a few men's things, watches and wallets and gloves and things like that. And I've expanded it out. So now there's like beard oil and beard balm, mustache balm, the shaving brush and shaving cream. And things like that. But the candles are probably one of the things that I get the most comments on because it smells good. Yeah.
I'll tell you, everybody, and I stop over like once a week just to look around. I think I've seen everyone that you have working there now. And, like, it took a couple of times because, you know, you come in and it's someone new and they're like, oh, hey, how are you? I'm like, I'm here once a week. I know where you're going. But I just like looking around because every time I look around, I find something different and something unique. And everybody that I send over there and talk about it, they say the same thing. They say, you know, there's not a lot of stores that carry that type of collection, that type of stuff. So.
Yeah, I try to keep it pretty blended and... I try to move the product around, so I'll watch. I mean, I try not to stare at people, but I do get a sense of kind of what when they come in, where do they walk around? What do they avoid? What gets attention? And sometimes it's just the most subtle way that you display something that just really grabs their attention. Or if I've moved something and all of a sudden the sales on it drop off, like it's a really heavy moving item, and then all of a sudden it's... You know, it's fallen off the radar. It's like, huh, I wonder what
it's retail science,
I did.
Right?
Yeah, and so it's really organic, and I just kind of watch and pay attention and add and take away, and it's been really interesting. The other thing is that because I have such a variety of things, like I only really order like if I can, like three, like if I'm getting something new and I can order only three. I'll order three and be like, okay, I'm going to order three. What kind of attention is this going to get? Was this worth it? Is this something I need to come back to? And sometimes it's a yes and sometimes it's a no, but then I only have three of them.
And you have so many local vendors too.
Yeah, I mean, started with a lot of local artisans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these are people that may not even have a store of their own or, you know, even an online presence. They might just be making stuff and you attracted them to be able to sell some of that stuff in your store, which I think is really cool.
Yep.
It provides an opportunity, of course, for you to have a wider collection, but it gives them an outlet as well for their stuff.
So. When I travel, I want to get something that's authentic to the space. When I was in Ojai, I like a little more utilitarian kind of things anyway. So I was in Ojai and I got a coffee mug and I got these sponge holders, which I have at the store actually. But there are these ceramic sponge holders, and they help air out your kitchen sponge, which always ends up still to this day in the bottom of my kitchen sink, Levi Champion. Please stop doing that. But, yeah, like those are the things that I kind of draw to. I'm like, it's authentic to the space. It'll add that little character to my house, and I can interact with it. Plus, ceramics just feel so good in your hands. So
you got you got a store downtown, you have a studio downtown, and I have to talk about downtown. So why did you choose downtown? Did you choose downtown because Main Street was there and you're like, let's put another store here? Do you have a deep love for downtown like I do? What is it? What is it about downtown?
I'd say it started with a deep love.
Yeah.
When I worked in downtown Champaign, this is before downtown Champaign is what it is now. Like it kind of almost like the way downtown Bloomington feels now, it's starting to flip the way that Champaign did like 15 years ago.
Okay.
Which is cool. But you know, I started working downtown. I liked the personalization that happens when you're in a downtown environment. Like, you walk into a business and you immediately are greeted oftentimes by the owner.
Right.
You know, and they're really working hard and, you know, running errands and, you know, there's just a buzz in a downtown area. And there was in Champaign and there is in Bloomington. And I guess it never occurred to me not to live or be down there. Because it just felt really natural for me to be in this little.
But you think Bloomington is on the up curve?
Yeah. What do you mean when you say
the flip?
Starting to flip?
Yeah. Okay, so what happened in Normal is an anomaly. Like the town of Normal invested in their downtown, which is they're now calling uptown, which whatever, whatever. I know there's split feelings on that. I don't care either way. They did that.
Yeah.
And they started it. And the businesses, well, of course, they were excited by it. And it drew business.
Not all initially, though, right? I mean, I think there were some uptown businesses that had some hesitation behind it.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
I didn't run a poll, but I'm sure. But more than anything, the city of Normal did it.
That's the thing.
And I don't, that doesn't happen.
Right.
Like, that doesn't happen. It's the businesses that make the difference. That's what happened in Champaign. You know, I would say the flipping point, the tipping point, Malcolm Gladwell plug, is when, so there's a walking section of Taylor Street in downtown Champaign, and the Blind Pig, before it is what it is now, also a little brewery now, Chris Knight owned it. He used to be on Taylor Street, and actually the Smashing Pumpkins played there, and quite a few bands before the Smashing Pumpkins were what they were in the 90s. And so the Blind Pig was there, and you'd have live music and stuff like that, and then that space closed. And I don't know how many years later, Carlos Nieto and his brother Marco started the Cowboy Monkey in the old Blind Pig spot. And they got a cafe permit. And cafes in downtown Champaign were a big deal even when I was there. And they, you know, you just sat outside on a day like today. If there was, if we had the coolness without the dampness,
yeah,
people would be outside.
Right.
Like, it's not even... Like, they wouldn't think anything about it. Yeah, we're going to go sit outside under the heater and with our coats and our beer and have some food. So we got this cafe permit, and what nobody expected was, instead of, like, the 5 tables they thought he'd put out, he put out, like, 30.
Yeah.
And he just took over Taylor Street. And I don't think it was 30 to start, but it was more than what people expected. And a lot of the businesses got mad. They were like, you're taking advantage. Like, this is a walking, this is city property. This isn't your property, blah, 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 blah. But what happened was the community said, heck yeah. This is awesome. Like, now there's this vibe. Now there's this place to go, and people attracted and drew to it, and it exploded. And then what it started to do is it started to force the other businesses to up their patio game, right? So then they had to go and be like, now we have to pick it up and compete with, you know, this entity. And now, I mean, you can go from one patio straight into another when you walk around downtown Champaign, and now there's shops and there's all sorts of stuff down there to move between. Bloomington, so, but that was the business owners. That was the business owners just saying, you know, screw it, we're gonna do this thing, we're gonna see what happens.
But it was also the city willing to take a risk and have that permit.
Well, the city, I don't think, realized exactly what he was gonna do.
Well, that's fair.
So, but when the city saw that, hey, the community is like, loves this, I think they probably reworked a negotiation or something. I don't know exactly all the behind the scenes, and I'm not a spokesperson for Nieto Enterprises by any means. I think the city just said, you know, hey, first of all, it's great revenue for them.
Sure.
And they said, okay, this is kind of what the community, they started to figure out a way that they could support it and support everybody and make it, I don't know how they changed it, but I know that there were some conversations on how do we not lose this thing that's been created, how do we support it, but then also support the other businesses so that if they wanted to do something like that. Now Blind Pig's reopened, they have 2 spaces downtown, and they have a huge, beautiful beer garden as well. And so now that's the downtown culture.
So what do you see as being potentially that spark in Bloomington?
I think night shops had a big, good impact. Honestly, I was talking to Chris and Matt last night, and I ran into them, and
Those are the owners?
Those are the owners of Night Shop. And I'm like, you guys are starting to do, what you're doing is good. Like, they have a good vision. They're taking their, taking their time might not be the right language, but I feel like they're not trying to rush into anything.
Purposeful,
like,
I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Purposeful. They've kind of drawn, you know, that little stretch of Main Street that people would avoid because of the college crowd. They really gave it an accessibility. I think Bakery and Pickle being down there, and you know, even what's the Irish bar?
Mulligan's, Killarney's.
Killarney's, you know, while they get infiltrated by college kids, Killarney's still stands alone, like, as a place the townies will go.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then that only helps support, you know, the common ground that's right there, right across the street. Like, that's accessible for, so I think that's kind of one of the things. I'm not saying it's the only thing, but I think it's really helping.
Yeah.
It's helping kind of pull, because right now the 400 block is kind of the hub. Like, it started, you know, know, with the coffee hound being right there, like, people identify with the coffee, mm-hmm. you know, thing. That is someplace you can take kids. It's familiar. It's safe. It's clean.
Ivy Lane.
It's that 400 block really tries not to have bars on that stretch.
Yeah.
Because it's so saturated in other parts of downtown. They want to keep that more family focused. And so the building owners advocate against liquor licenses to a degree on the 400 block. But, you know, by having, you know, night shop in these spaces, you know, the chocolatier, we lost them. Mm-hmm. Like, they were, the front of their building was just, I think they had multiple instances of, like, the windows being broken and stuff just from the rowdiness of the evening. And I know, is it Stash?
Stash is there, yeah.
Stash, I mean, they're the glass in their front door's broken. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to fix it. I mean, if it gets broken and then you fix it and it gets broken again, like,
yeah, no, that's
so I think that by having this pull, these things that people are really wanting, you know, when was it, Show Me's opened and they added that little patio or that little beer garden,
sure.
Like, I'm like, man, if I didn't know downtown Bloomington the way I know it, like, that would be where I would draw to, like,
yeah.
The patio. And unfortunately, the spaces that have taken over that space until, you know, Chris and Matt got a hold of it, they didn't really nurture that space. And now it's slightly covered because, you know, you're in the middle of a bunch of concrete. Like, it's only going to get hot.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, in the wintertime, people want to go outside. They want to get a fresh air.
They did a good job with that. Yeah.
They really did. And now it's a patio where, like, you'll feel comfortable this summer. I'm excited to just go Absolutely. And hang out and grab brunch or whatnot. Like, they really thought about, like, how people actually live and function.
So downtown is always talked about, you know, in politics, in local politics, in the media. What is one thing that the media maybe talks about too much with downtown and they stress on too much? And then what is one thing that you wish they would talk about more about downtown?
Well, I used to say that it was probably the crime in downtown Bloomington.
That they talk too much about?
Yeah, I would say that for a little while. But, you know, anymore, I feel like when there's negative conversation about downtown, it's about that empty State Farm building.
Yeah.
Right now, I think that's kind of the hot.
Or any empty building. Empty buildings in general.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, that there was that pullout of State Farm. And so people kind of assume that there's nothing down there.
Yeah.
One of the things that it's, so our downtown is big. Mm-hmm. It's really big. Champaign is really about four city blocks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're building it out, so maybe it's like six or eight city blocks now, and mm-hmm. I'm just generalizing. Nobody fact-check these comments. Mm-hmm. But our downtown is sprawling. Like, it reaches all the way over almost to Clinton in some
our
sections
current,
of
way,
it.
The way our current map code is written, I believe it's over 25 city blocks.
I
believe
that's bigger than St. Louis,
huge.
Right?
Yeah. And
so people are like, why can't downtown come together? Because it's huge,
right.
And it's sprawling, and you've got Madison and East that are one-way busy traffic that kind of keep the little center mm-hmm. kind of isolated. But then if you wanted to walk from Night Shop to Rosie's, like, you better not be wearing your heels, my friend.
Yeah.
So it's just that it's so sprawling that that people overlook what is there because you only are really, they're thinking of it as like, oh, it's downtown, you should be able to walk everything. You can. It's going to be a little bit of a hike.
I always compare it to a mall when we were growing up, right? Like, you got to think of downtown like a mall.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm going from, and this is probably a bad example in Bloomington with our state of our current mall, but let's pretend for a second. If I'm going from Sears to Kohl's and I have to pass, you know, offices that I can't go into and an abandoned building and a big brick wall to mm-hmm. get to from one to the other, that's not going to be as attractive as if it's all full with
right.
stores that I can stop in, restaurants, things I can do along the way.
Right. You may run into people that, you know.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's what makes a downtown. I mean, the term make it a destination of itself is important. People need to say, I want to go downtown, mm-hmm. not I want to go to a night shop or Rosie's or wherever. Mm-hmm. They need to say, I want to go downtown, and that helps with the whole parking stigma too, right? So if they're just coming downtown, they can park and then walk anywhere they want downtown. But if they're going to Coffee Hound, they want to park right in front of Coffee Hound.
Yeah.
So I think the more we get stores like yours and connect the dots between some of the anchors that's been down there for a while or some of the new upcoming things that are happening, like in Night Shop, mm-hmm. that will help with that.
Parking in any downtown is always going to be the thing people gripe about. And sure. So, I mean, honestly, like, if somebody wants to walk into my store and complain about parking, it's going to fall on deaf ears because I've heard it for years, and yet I seem to always make it to work on time.
Right.
Over the last 13 years. Yeah. So the parking thing, you know, keep an umbrella in your car, you know, whatever. It's the parking is always going to be a thing. What I'd be curious to know is, you know, I'd like to get one of those little trackers and find out the distance between Sears and Kohl's.
It's
or
been done.
Between like parking at Meijer and getting a gallon of milk versus parking in the Market Street deck and walking to Coffee House.
So Bloomington's Economic Development Division actually did that study, and I don't have it in front of me. They didn't do the one with the parking lot. I've said that for years. I say, you know, people complain about not parking in front of Coffee Hound, but they'll park a mile away at Walmart.
Yeah, exactly.
But I believe it's from Rosie's to Coffee Hound. I could have those two, but roughly those areas is what is about the same as Kohl's to Sears or Kohl's to JCPenney.
Rosie's
maybe.
To where?
Coffee Hound.
Oh, really? So, okay, I believe that.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, you got the elements, so yeah. I'll give them that. But as far as getting out of your car and walking, it's come on. It's a couple blocks.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Normal, where that was very top-down, city-driven, I think. There was a vision. They, you know, put in a bunch of money, took out a bunch of debt in order to do the things down there.
I mean, they needed to do it. I mean, I like what they did, and I think it was smart, and I think it's going to help make ISU more competitive. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's that kind of model. There's also the kind of model you're talking about with Bloomington, where it's more bottom-up, right, of what are the people who are there
more organic.
Doing and building. There's still a role for the city to assist with that, though, and to facilitate it.
Right.
So, Justin mentioned
it.
So, what are some... what are some of the things, or if you could think of like one thing that seems like low-hanging fruit or...
I sent an email to Tim Gleason. I know where you're going, so I'm sorry I'm interrupting.
No, it's fine. Just wonder
what
your
thoughts
are.
I sent an email to Tim Gleason a couple weeks ago,
city
maybe
manager
even
of
a month. Yeah, city manager of Bloomington. And I go, look, like, you know, we did that downtown business owner picnic over the summer, and they had these ideas of having the sculptures hanging and the parklets and... you know, turning one of the little parking lots that is, I'm still not sure of the accessibility of the one just south of Stash and Common Ground, but we don't have to get into that now, into like a temporary park and things like that. I'm like, that's all well and good, but like, here's what I see. What if instead of spending all this money, why can't the leaves be picked up? Why do we only have a couple recycling bins? Mm-hmm. Like, why can't, like, we just talk about, like, the cleanliness of downtown? Like I go out and I sweep all the time, and I asked, I go on a Facebook group that I'm in of downtown business owners. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with all these leaves? I've got a tree right in front. There's this huge pile that I'd like to sweep out from under the benches. And they're like, oh, you have to bag them up and take them. Like,
what?
So I was supposed to dry it, put them in my brand new car, and take all these. I'm like, no,
use
no,
your
no,
husband's
no, no, no.
Truck.
Mm, yeah.
But no, that's ridiculous.
So,
I had no idea.
So, yeah. So I'm like, are you kidding? So we don't even have a solution for what to do with the leaves on the trees that the city's maintaining. So that was my, like, the gum on the sidewalks. Like, there are, in some cities, ordinances against, you know, having more than 3 pieces of gum on your sidewalk. You know, you have to go out as a business owner or you get fined if you have more than 3 pieces of gum on the sidewalk, like, stuck. Like, fresh gum. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if it's petrified and, like, kind of just blending into the cement. But it's the cleanliness thing. So, like, we
snow?
Need to
how's,
have...
How's the quality of people removing their snow, too?
It's not too bad. I mean, you've got your few... spaces that are a little tricky. It is the business owner's responsibility.
Yeah, yeah. I just mean there'd be a code enforcement thing there too if someone really just is chronically.
Yeah,
I think that is an issue in the wintertime from my experience. Is because I would agree with Carmen. Most businesses shovel their snow, but the ones that don't hurt everybody.
Yeah,
because when I park my car a block away from where I want to go, and I see I have to truck, you know, go across this 6 inches or 3 inches of snow to get there, it's not as appealing to me.
My big concern really about the snow isn't the snow, it's the ice on the easements for the alley. Yeah. Like, that's where I see our biggest risk.
It is, especially there on Market Street.
That one's really nasty, right between the health services.
Yeah, we're trying to encourage people to park in a free parking garage and walk to downtown. And it literally is a sheet of ice.
It's bad.
Right there.
And it doesn't take much for it to get really nasty right there.
That's true.
So I would say cleanliness is number one. And number two is lighting.
I think lighting's
a big issue. I mean, when they strung those lights between the trees and the light poles, I think it's great. It's really pretty. But the ones on the east side of the 400 block of Main are out. And they've been out for a while. So it's like, okay, if you want to add the lighting, great. But can we maintain it?
So
those were the things that I had suggested to him. I'm like, and the third suggestion was consistency with those things. Like, we need consistency with the lighting, with the cleanliness. There has to be consistency across the board. Those are cost-effective, simple things that'll make a big impact. I'm sweeping in front of my store a few weeks ago, and this lady comes out and she goes, did you just get off the boat? And I go, what are you talking about? What? And she's like, she goes, only in Europe do people take pride in their sidewalks. She goes, so you must not be from around here. And I'm like, I'm like, no, I am.
Yeah. Well, as someone who grew up in Europe, I do find it fascinating that more people don't see that as being their responsibility. I walk to work and I walk past an apartment complex and they're not very good about cleaning up about shoveling their sidewalk. And I contacted the apartment and let them know, like, hey, this is a pretty high traffic area. There's actually a lot of people who walk through here. It's pretty close to State Farm, so, you know, it's a fair number of people who walk through there on a given day. Turns into a sheet of ice really quickly, and, you know, it's pretty hazardous. And he's like, well, that's the city sidewalk. That's not my fault. And I'm like, well, actually, it is your responsibility to do it. And he's like, no, it's not. It's not my responsibility. And I said, okay, well, that aside, it's very dangerous, and there's people who are walking and could slip. And he's like, well, those people should be more careful.
Wow.
I'm like, well, okay. You know, if legal repercussions or just human decency isn't going to motivate you, I don't really know what's going to. But so there's A, some misinformation, and B, just like that culture kind of fascinates me. You know, the people have that perspective, like you said, of just like, we don't care about our sidewalks. It's just this public space. And but hopefully what I would hope to see is that if everyone's doing it and there's just this, you know, one, let's say that there's one house in the neighborhood who does not shovel their snow. Either maybe it's somebody who's like elderly and can't get out and do it, then maybe people can come and help them out with that. Or maybe then the, you know, social pressure gets to them and they see like, oh, okay, you know, I'm the only one with the nasty sidewalk filled with gum and dirt, you know, and I better get out and sweep this thing.
It's everybody's responsibility to raise the bar in a downtown. And so while one person, so I tried to have my hours open till 8 when I opened. I tried it.
You
and
did.
I'm like, and then we scaled it back to 7 because, you know, people weren't walking around. And then I scaled it back to 6 like a lot of the other businesses because I'm like, hey, I tried it. I got a little bit of flack from a couple businesses that were like, you know, if you're going to do that, like, you're going to force us to do that and da 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 da. And I'm like,
I would have said, yep.
Well,
yep.
I'm going to see what it's like. I'm going to see. And you know what? What the community response was is, you know, we're not ready for this yet.
I think it will be.
And that's okay.
I think it will be.
Then I can always bump it out later.
That's
but,
right.
You know.
I think it's good you tried. And I mean, downtown has a lot of awesome things going on with it. Mm-hmm. And I know you both, I think all three of us are pretty big fans of downtown Bloomington.
First Friday is coming up. Are you doing anything at your boutique for that?
Yeah.
Do you want to leave it as a surprise? Or?
No, not at all. It's been on the front page of the paper twice now.
Yeah.
So,
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, well, it was in the front page of the Arts and Entertainment on Thanksgiving, and then I found out by, like, multiple posts or multiple text messages last Thursday that we made the front page of Neighbors, and I'm just laughing because I'm like, really, people are going to get sick of me. do you guys remember the talking Christmas tree at Eastland Mall?
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to do that.
That's awesome.
So I'm going to do the talking Christmas tree at the store. Earmuffs kids. basically, I'm going to shove my husband under a table and mic him and do the talking Christmas tree. And on the way to Tennessee, we dubbed thy talking Christmas tree, Bruce the Spruce. And so kids can come in and ask questions like, where did candy canes, like, why do we have candy canes? And maybe Bruce will read the Christmas story or something like that. But it'll be a talking
Christmas
tree.
That's a wonderful
tree.
Idea. That's awesome. Going
to
be cool.
And just because I didn't want to, like, somebody was like, well, why don't you have Santa Claus at your store? I'm like, there's already going to be.
Yeah.
And I don't need to compete with that.
No.
Like, I don't need to try to, like, overdo what somebody else has done. Because we do have a Santa Claus downtown on the weekends now from 1 to 4 on Monroe, right across from Reality on Monroe. And a little plug. So I'm like, you know, the talking Christmas tree at the mall was kind of
like
cool.
It. So that's Friday the 7th. What time does that start?
It's 5 to 8, December 7th. And a bunch of businesses, galleries and stuff will be open with items to sell. So it's a great opportunity to go out. It's very family-oriented, family-friendly, so there's lots of stuff to just take the kids and walk around. And and because everything's open, like, the downtown doesn't feel as vast on those nights. Like, it really feels warm, and you can just dip in from one place to the next as you move around. Yeah. Usually there's snacks.
I got busy this year. I had planned last year to do this, and I forgot. But I really wanted to try to lobby, to try to block off, especially the block where... was at the 400 block.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why during those first Fridays there needs to be cars driving up and down there? Again, my European sensibilities come through. I've got three little kids, and I would feel just so much more comfortable in that space if we could have people park outside. I might try to see if I can talk to some.
I think on first Fridays that's a good idea. I mean, what are we talking there? 4 hours? 3 hours?
Three.
So,
you just have to encourage people to move their cars before that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, if the occasional one needs to come up and down for a specific reason, or if a car needs to leave. Then
yeah, okay. Right now it's a bus route too, so that could also be a little tricky.
That does play. Yeah.
The downtown by where I grew up was just walking only.
Yeah.
And that's what I mentally associate with the downtown is cars not being down there. But I think that makes me fresh off the boat still.
In New Orleans, they block off parts of the French Quarter between 10 and 2. So after the traffic, the morning traffic's come through and then leave it open. And so they let their buskers and their street performers and stuff kind of come and infiltrate, and people can move around a little easier. And then once, you know, people are starting to get home from work, then they just remove the barriers and you can drive again. And I mean, that's obviously a different climate, and they have a little more availability to do that. But
buskers, that's what we need, buskers.
Yeah.
I miss those.
There's and I don't know if it's since been changed, and Justin, you might be able to talk on this, but it's actually illegal to be a busker in Bloomington.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some legality things.
Oh.
People kind of overlook it because it's good, like, energy. But yeah, there's this old ordinance. I don't know if anything's moved on it, but I know a few years ago that it was kind of a thing where you're kind of playing with the legal system a little bit there. Mm. So, but yeah, I do think that we need to lift the busker thing, because it's nice when you go downtown and there's music outside.
Yes.
When everything's shoved inside, then all you're doing is flipping from inside to outside. And if you want to encourage that outside energy, you do need those individuals that are willing to do that, to just leave them the availability to do it.
Yeah. People need to see that there's action happening downtown, and being outside helps with that.
Yeah.
Right?
And having music outside draws. So, you know, when you're working from pulling people from Night Shop to Coffee Hound to Red Raccoon to the square around the museum, you know, music will help kind of pull and give those individuals that are kind of trying to explore downtown, like, hey, what's going on over there? I'm going to follow the sound.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
Carmen, we are at coming on an hour and a half. So
oh, wow.
We've talked about yoga, retail, downtown, and alcohol. I want to give you at least 30 seconds. Is there anything you want to plug? Give us your website, how we can find Main Street and Von Schomps.
Von Schomps.
How do we find all that information? And
So Main Street Yoga, www.mainstreetyoga.com for schedules and information. Von Schomps, which is just VONCHAMPS boutique. We've got a Facebook page, no website as of yet. So we're both on the 400 block of downtown. So if you're at Coffee Hound, look across the street, look left, look right, and you'll find us.
This was an incredibly interesting podcast for me. I hope other people think the same thing. Yeah. But thanks for giving up an hour and a half of your Sunday to come do this.
Thanks for having me.
It's my first time talking to you, so it was really nice to meet
you. Yeah, you too.
Enjoy it. Awesome.
Thanks.
All right, that's episode number 2 in the books for Pod BN.
That was pretty fun. I enjoyed that.
I thought Carmen was a great guest. I mean, she has a wide history of and diverse things that we were able to talk about. Made it a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. So we are up on iTunes now, and we are also still on Podbean, so you can get us where you need to find us.
That's right. We have a Facebook page. Just search Podbean, and you'll be able to find us. We also want to thank our sponsors, of course, Play Normal Esports. That's the studio we are in. It's a really cool place. And then, of course, Normal Gadgets. If you have anything that breaks, cell phones, computers, anything like that, they are the place to take it. They are located at 802 South El Dorado, so check them out.
All right, we good?
We good. We're gonna take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. Oh, never mind, I'll just play the music.